Blog Talk Radio.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhymes record break neck spines and vertebrae, step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim thugging them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect, all I need is a check. Might check.
Take that for data. Ain't nobody gonna rook us, I can tell you that right now. You ain't gonna rook nobody on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I am joined by my co-host, who also will not be rooked. And he will have you also take that data. Data says you had a very successful day over at GBB, Mr. Brandon Connor. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'm actually a little surprised how well that did. I thought I'd end up with, you know, a couple of comments that said, hey, this was kind of funny or this was bad. But it's actually done pretty well. And people, like, even the Pounding the Rock, the SB Nation Spurs blog, has actually reacted pretty well to it as well. So, you know, I'm glad people had fun with it. Maybe something to cheer them up after game one and game two, because those have not gone particularly well for the Grizzlies.
The most successful article of the playoffs so far for GrizzlyBearBlues.com in terms of page views, which is one of the ways we are, of course, measured. So, Brandon Connor, well done, sir. Talented guy. Well-deserved. And happy, as always, to have you as my co-host. And I am happy, as always, that you, wherever you are, however you may be tuning in, are listening to GBB Live. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can follow us on Twitter, tweet at us, do all those fun things at GBB Live. You can follow Brandon on Twitter at Ball From Grace. You can follow me on Twitter personally at Joe Mullinax, MULLINAX. And then, of course, you can follow our blog, the great GrizzlyBearBlues.com. I'm very proud of the work our writers have been doing. Follow the blog so you don't miss any of those articles at SBN Grizzlies. There's also a chat room that if you're listening to the show live as we record on Wednesday night this week, a little bit different than our usual Thursdays because of the fact that the Grizzlies game three, aka the most anticipated game that the Grizzlies may or may not get smacked in the history of the Grizzlies. We'll talk more about that here in a moment. That is on Thursday, of course, and we don't want to compete with that. So we are doing our podcast now. All right, we're doing it on the Wednesday, and hopefully you'll be listening to it leading into Thursday night's game three if you're not listening live. Other ways to get in touch with the show. Make sure that you are, like we said, following at GBB Live. Next week, we'll talk about this later on in the podcast, but this may be the second to last episode until our playoff hiatus. If we're being honest with ourselves, the Tuesday night is game five. If the Grizzlies make it there, back in San Antonio, and then the next time we would record would be Wednesday night. That would be this coming Wednesday, April 26th, excuse me. It could be an end-of-the-season show, and we will be doing a giveaway of Grizz Essentials, two Grizz Essentials boxes. We'll do that giveaway on the 26th, kind of a thank you to our listeners as we go on a brief hiatus for the rest of the playoffs. We'll come back during the NBA Finals. That's kind of the way it works once the Grizzlies are eliminated. Hopefully that is not the case, but it is possible that it will be. So that's another way to get in touch with the show. Make sure you're following so you have access to that opportunity next week. Guests on the podcast this week. We're excited to have Matt Hardlicka, senior features writer. He's been on with us multiple times now. We're excited to have him back on GBB Live. He's going to talk about the Fizdale rant that we're going to break down here in a moment. You may have heard me try to do my best impression. It wasn't a very good one, but I tried. A for effort. David Fizdale's rant, of course, all that has come with that. The energy that is in Memphis right now, considering they're down 0-2 with a 20-some point differential, is pretty amazing. So that's a testament to Coach Fizdale and the fire he showed, and a testament to the Grizzlies fans just trying to find something to be positive about. So we'll talk to Matt about that. We'll talk to him about the series so far. And then in our final segment of the show, I'm excited to have Brandon mention Pounding the Rock, the SB Nation blog for the San Antonio Spurs. One of their terrific writers, and I'm probably going to butcher his name. I'm hoping I get it right. I tried to do research on how to pronounce it. Quixem Ramirez, Quixem. I'm going to make sure I ask him right as we bring him on. He is terrific. He's going to be on to talk about the Fizdale rant from the Spurs perspective, whether or not they think that's true, that Kawhi shouldn't have had the 19 foul shots and all that stuff. We'll also talk to him about if anything makes him nervous about the series moving forward, or is San Antonio expecting to break out the brooms on Saturday night and sweep the Memphis Grizzlies. And we'll talk about that as well at the end of the podcast. So lots to get into, but let's get into the major story of the past 48 hours here, Brandon. The David Fizdale rant, the viral video, press conference heard around the NBA world. It made this series relevant because the Grizzlies, even after a game two performance in the second half where they look a little bit more engaged, they get the lead down from 26, I believe it was, to a paltry four before the Spurs eventually pulled away and win game two. The Grizzlies looked better in that second half of game two. And David Fizdale, there was a major foul discrepancy. I believe Kawhi Leonard shot 19 free throws by himself and made every single one of them to his credit. Meanwhile, the Grizzlies only shot 15 free throws. So Fizdale went off. Most of you have probably heard that rant by now, but essentially a summary is, you know, Mike Conley does things right. Zach Randolph's a rugged player. They're not getting the respect they deserve from the officials. It's unprofessional, which is probably what led to his $30,000 fine, the direct calling of unprofessional to the NBA officials. And then, of course, the quotable lines talking about Popovich having pedigree, but they're not going to rook us, talking about Coach Fizdale being a head coaching rookie. And then at the very end, the punctuation, the exclamation mark, Brandon, take that for data. And, of course, Memphis being Memphis now has 9 or 10 different bootleg versions of that shirt or those two different slogans. I haven't seen one with take that for data on the front. And on the back say they ain't going to rook us, but I've seen a lot of different combinations. I've seen lots of different designs. It seems like Memphis is rallying behind this, and that's good, because on the basketball floor, there hasn't been much to get behind with the Grizzlies the past couple of games against the Spurs.
Right, and I think if anything, I think going into Game 3, being down 2-0, maybe there was a chance that the crowd wasn't going to be as lively, but I think this kind of will give them something to get behind. The shirts will be there. I think the Grizzlies have already said that they'll have some for sale and that the proceeds will go to the Grizzlies Foundation.
Yep.
Right. So I think that gives the crowd a little something to get behind. And I think, you know, the fact that they were able to cut that big deficit from 26 down to 4, kind of gives you a little, like, you don't feel like the first game you got blown out and it was just, I mean, everything felt like, I mean, it was going to be over in 4. You had really no chance. But the fact that they were able to fight back at least a little gives you a little bit of hope going into game 3. So, I mean, this feels like if they're going to get a game, it feels like it's going to be 3. I mean, I still think they're going to get it back to San Antonio. But just the rant sort of, I think now you've also got, like, the legal probably, the rest will probably, you know, be a little bit more, I guess, lean more, kind of give Conley sort of those borderline calls that he wasn't getting. Maybe they'll have a little bit of a, I always get this confused, like if it's a looser whistle or a tighter whistle. But maybe they won't give Kawhi as much the benefit of the doubt. So maybe you'll pick up something there. And I think if the Grizzlies are really going to win, just the circumstances with the crowd, the refs, the Fizdale rant, everything sort of sets up perfectly now for Memphis going into game 3. So you feel pretty good about tomorrow night's game from that standpoint, at least.
And there have been comparisons made to the 2013 series with the Clippers and how the Clippers were up 2-0 on the Grizzlies. And then Memphis rattled off 4 straight wins, the famous game 6, you know, the Zach Randolph celebration game and all that stuff, you know, getting ejected, skipping off the court. I was there for that game, and it was freaking awesome. But the Clippers and the Spurs could not be two more different franchises. The Clippers, I think almost the entire NBA now acknowledges, very talented team, pretty mentally weak. I think Chris Paul leaves, to be honest with you. I think he's going to go somewhere where he has a chance to win a title. I don't think he sees that with the Clippers. It's possible he stays there just to make that, you know, extra 6-year, $200-plus million contract. But I think he's interested in winning, and I think he's going to look to go elsewhere to do that. That's just me, and that's pure prognostication, no sources or anything on that. But anyway, my point is the Spurs led by Kawhi Leonard are entirely different than the Clippers led by Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. I'm not sure the Spurs will be rattled. I think that if there was ever an opportunity for them to be rattled, it will be game three because of the way that it's going to go down with the chants and the shirts and, you know, the music's going to be live and there's going to be all sorts of outside factors. There wasn't a ton of energy coming into this game. We were talking about on the live stream that we did on Facebook Live, and Kevin Leip last week with us, Brandon, talked about he was concerned that there wouldn't be a sellout. Like, game three may not be sold out if it was down 0-2 and it was a convincing 0-2. The Spurs have won both games by an average of 20-plus points. It has been a convincing 0-2, and yet I mentioned in an article, our roundtable today, lots of great content, like I mentioned, over at grizzlybearblues.com. Make sure you're checking it out. Brandon's article is great. We also did a roundtable. And in that roundtable, this feels like a team that has momentum, and that makes no sense because they're down 0-2 to the San Antonio freaking Spurs. So that is an act of amazing hype in and of itself, that Memphis does seem to feel pretty good about itself despite the fact that it's down 0-2 to one of the best teams in the NBA. Now, I think part of that, aside from the shirts and the Fizdale rant and all that stuff, is the fact that they started trying things and they were working. You know, whether it's starting Zach Randolph in the second half, whether it's playing big with Jermichael Green at the three, you know, whether it's trying to get different kinds of shooters out there, different kinds of offensive looks, different kinds of movement. You know, they're experimenting and they're starting to find some things that maybe will hit and work. Now, I don't necessarily think that means you need to start Zach Randolph, but at the same time, it's encouraging to me not just to see Fizdale stand up for his players, and I do agree with you, Brandon, I think that will result. To me, a tighter whistle means they're calling it more closely, like they're calling more fouls. A looser whistle would be they're not calling as much. To me,
right,
I think
always
you'll
get
probably see,
mixed up.
It's okay. I think you'll see Kawhi kind of get the looser whistle, where he maybe in San Antonio got a couple of calls he shouldn't have. He probably won't get those in Memphis, and I think it'll be a tighter whistle for Mike Conley and Zach Randolph and guys. But I think Fizdale, if he's a smart coach, and you can agree or disagree with this, you know, and I think you mentioned this a little bit, and we've mentioned it on the blog. The Grizzlies, they've fallen in love with the three to an extent, but they have to remember who they are in terms of attacking the rim, in terms of working the paint. And now that you've gotten the official's attention, you've essentially spent $30,000 to get a better officiated game for you at least, you have to attack the rim. So I'm hoping to see a lot of sets early in that game on Thursday night where they just go flying at the rim. They're attacking the paint. They're trying to find ways to get at the bucket and take advantage of the fact that the officials are going to be looking to perhaps throw an extra foul or two that maybe wouldn't have been called for this against the Spurs in San Antonio. Maybe in the Grindhouse it will be.
Right. And you talk about, we've talked about, you know, getting points in the paint because that's really sort of been just, it's been a huge piece of the Grizzlies' identity really throughout the grit and grind run with Mark and Zach and playing two bigs. And that's just been, you know, a part of their identity, but you don't want to just, you want to do that, but you also want to be effective. And Peter Edmiston actually had a tweet, and I just pulled it up. He said, per synergy, the Grizzlies are the worst team in the playoffs around the basket. They are getting 0.683 points per possession, which is shooting 34%, and Toronto is second worst at 1.02. So, I mean, they're worst team in the playoffs so far by a mile. So they need to get paint scoring and be able to produce there, but the shots need to be more effective, and that's really been the problem. Like, Zach was just the first night he couldn't buy a basket. He was in minus 39 in a game you lost by what, 26 points. It was just they need to be more effective with their bigs, not just that. And then we talked about the 3-point shooting, and that's been an issue. And the guy, like Troy Daniels, the guy that they bring in who's supposed to be, like, the one good thing he does is shoot threes, and he hasn't been able to find a shot. He looks rattled. And so it's just they need to be more effective with their shots. Their threes need to, like, they need to at least hit some threes. They need to have those guys find their shot, and they also need to start making the point, the shots in the paint that they take. They need to make them count now, and be able, like, hopefully, like, maybe the refs having a tighter whistle when Memphis has the ball, maybe that'll help them out a little. But that's one thing they've got to improve on that part of the game if they want to, like, even have a shot at this.
The Grizzlies have three or four wing players, excuse me. They have four wing players who have made one total three-point shot over the course of the series, and they've all played at least 20 minutes or more. Troy Daniels hasn't made a single three in five attempts. Wayne Selden hasn't made a single three in five attempts. Andrew Harrison has only made one three in five attempts. And then James Ennis has only attempted three threes in 47 minutes, which is a problem in and of itself, and he hasn't made a single one. So you're looking at a team that outside of Mark and Mike, who are actually shooting really well from the perimeter, 9 of 17 so far in the series, outside of those two, there's not a ton going on in terms of three-point shooting. Jermichael's shooting 50%, but he's only taken four shots. So the Grizzlies have to find their offensive range in general. I mean, you look at Mike Conley. He's shooting 35% on two-point back baskets, so only 35% inside the three-point line. Thank goodness he's shooting 50% from beyond the arc. Zach Randolph is shooting horribly, 38.7% overall from the field. You're looking at guys like James Ennis, who are shooting 33%. Andrew Harrison, who's taken 11 shots and only made four of them. Wayne Selden, 2 for 10. Jermichael Green, 2 for 8. There's a lot of guys that just are not scoring the basketball, and part of that is due to the Spurs being a good defensive team, but part of that is the Grizzlies just missing shots that they have to make. Maybe they'll be motivated to do that in Game 3, and that's what we're going to talk about with our first guest here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live this week. He is a senior features writer for GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He's one of the very best we have to offer over at GBB. We're going to ask him if this take that for data and all that stuff actually is going to make a difference in this series. His name is Matt Hardlicka. Welcome back to GBB Live, Matt. I hope you are not planning on trying to rook us, because you are not going to rook us.
Hey, guys. Can I make a confession?
You can make confession, Matt.
My confession is I have no idea what take that for data means.
I agree completely.
What does it mean?
You said that.
What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. Right?
He's frustrated by not being a numbers guy, maybe. I honestly have spent a lot of time, Matt, more time than I would care to admit, trying to figure out exactly what take that for data means. Brandon, do you have any idea?
I think it's a Star Trek reference.
it's either Star Trek or some one enterprising tweeter thought it might have been a Goonies reference. So
I'm not very I have to admit I'm actually not familiar with the Goonies.
Not familiar with the Goonies. That might be
all right.
Let's move on. Right.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Before we move on to talking about you know the Fizdale rant and all that stuff, Brandon has one more small thing to add here.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, we were talking about like what the Grizzlies needed to do, like performances that they needed to get from their players, and like the issue they had with like game two, Mark was like the first half was complete, like almost a complete zero. And so they need to get Mark and Mike going at the same time. And they've kind of had issues with that in the first two games, especially like the first half of game two.
Absolutely. I mean, they need their three best players to be the three best players. And we'll talk more about that here in a moment. I agree with that completely, Brandon. Those guys, you know, and Zach kind of has to rise above role like most of the guys on this team right now and be that third scorer. And he did that in game two, and Mike did that in game two, but Mark wasn't able to. And then in game one, obviously, it was Mark who played really well. And then, you know, Mike and Zach kind of tail off towards the end. They have to put together a complete game, and maybe they'll do that now that they're all unified behind their head coach. And how inspiring it is, Matt, to see Mike Conley come out and say, he's not going to pay that, we're going to pay that. And, you know, Service Master, the Grizzlies sponsor, saying, no, we're going to pay that. And everybody making all these great shirts. Memphis has so much energy after this viral rant by David Fizdale and the fine that came with it. But the actual meat of it, take out the take that for data, which I agree with you. I don't quite understand either, but people are fired up about it. They were looking for something to believe in, like we were talking about. So I'm cool with that. People were excited about a game that we were worried wouldn't be sold out. But the actual meat and potatoes of the rant, him talking about Kawhi Leonard, who isn't exactly a wild child himself, you know, he kind of alludes to the fact that Mike Conley's never gotten a technical and he's not respected by the officials. Kawhi gets 19 fouls and or 19 foul shots, excuse me. And SB Nation, our own mothership, kind of did an article agreeing with Fizdale. They took a look at every foul that was committed against Kawhi, and they said, here, this one didn't necessarily need to be a foul, and that one wasn't that bad. They overall agreed with Fizdale, at least in this particular instance. The meat of that rant from David Fizdale, Matt, was David Fizdale right?
I mean, I'm really not a ref guy. Like, I don't know any of the ref names. I don't know who hates the Grizzlies and who loves the Grizzlies. I don't think that the refs cost the game for the Grizzlies. I think that they just got off to a really bad start. I think that on balance, I've listened to, I mean, the Dunked On guys did a whole freaking dry breakdown of whether the rant was warranted or not. They seem to think that it probably was not. I tend to the two that I thought were a little questionable was Mark tied up Kawhi at one point and they called a foul and it wasn't, or at least, you know, you expect Mark to get that call sometimes. So I thought that one was a pretty poor call. And then there was a play near the end of the game where the Grizzlies were at 5 and trying to get it down to 2 or 3. And Conley jumped off of 2 feet in the lane and tried to kind of go around a Spurs defender or 3. I don't remember exactly who it was. And took some contact and didn't get a foul. And then there was a layup on the other end because of the fast break. I'll say this. Generally, free throw discrepancy is not because of the refs, in my opinion. It's because of the location of shots, who's taking them, and how willing and good they are at drawing contact. So, like, the Grizzlies foul a lot. They are the fouliest team in the league. They give up a lot of free throws. You get free throws if you play the Memphis Grizzlies. So I'm not surprised that Kawhi got 19 free throws. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. The point of the rant is not that Fizdale was in the right. It's that he had an argument to, you know, sort of bring the team together and to sort of take the onus of responsibility off of them and put it onto, you know, another enemy. And I think probably that it worked. It seems like people are rallying around it. So, you know, you can make numbers say a lot of different things. And Fizdale's not a numbers guy, as he told us. So,
right.
You know.
Take that for data, Matt. Take that for data,
take
you
that
nerd.
For data. Do you say data or data?
I say data. I'm a data guy.
See, I say data
I
too. And then
yeah.
Vernon, did you listen to Vernon and Wallace? Is that why you're asking?
No. What did they
say?
Yep.
Because they had like the same discussion about like, and Bruno said just like he said in some instances he says data and then sometimes he says
yep.
data, just depending on the situation.
Oh yeah, yep.
Tomato tomato, I suppose. Well, it you know, this is the type of groundbreaking analysis you get when you come to GBB Live and grizzlybearblues.com right here, ladies and gentlemen. I tend to agree with you, Matt, in terms of data versus data. I think that's fair. And I also agree the point of the rant was not necessarily to make it so that everybody analyzes Kawhi's foul shot taking. I think the point of it was to, like you said, deflect blame from the players that are struggling, which we're about to talk about, and take it a bit onto himself. You know, maybe him, they're not going to rook us, which is easily a better quotable line from that speech. But taking it, you know, making it personal for him and also taking on some of that blame. That's what a good head coach does. They are there to deal with the crap, you know what I mean? That is their
yeah.
job. That they want to deflect those issues wherever they may be coming from away from their players and take it on themselves. That's partly why they get paid. And I think that the story coming out of game 2 was not the Grizzlies getting beat twice by a point differential over 20 points. The story coming out of game 2 was Fizdale's rant and how the Grizzlies are going to rally behind it. He changed the narrative coming out of game 2, and we all love to talk about narratives as much as I know you love to talk about narratives, Matt. But it's true. It wasn't about the Grizzlies getting smoked. It was about what is game three going to be like now that Memphis has something to rally behind. And that is some brilliant coaching work, in my opinion. So he is thriving right now. There's no doubt about that. David Fizdale with his speech. We'll talk maybe about rotations where he's not as strong here in a moment. But he definitely did well in that speech, that presser. There's no doubt about that. I think most people would agree that Mike Conley's playing pretty well for the most part. I wish he would shoot the basketball a little bit better. But beyond that, you know, Matt, who in your opinion, beyond the stats, you know, watching the games, who is doing really well right now, in your opinion, if anybody? Again, they're getting smoked by the Spurs, so maybe they're not doing – and not, nobody in particular is doing well. And who is really struggling these first two games for Memphis?
I thought James Ennis had a pretty good second half when they finally started playing him more. I think Conley's been great in the series personally. I mean, their guards are outside of their point guards. When they put Danny Green or Kawhi on him, and he's gotten bat by Danny Green quite a bit. And then he has to finish through two more bigs and a defensive player of the year. And he's been doing as much as I think anybody could ask of him. It's just a really tough assignment. And he's a small dude. I thought Zebo, if I'm looking for bright spots in the second half, it's that Zebo got going. The Spurs give him trouble. Like, Joe, you're going to hate this, but I was like, way into a Grizzlies preview for this playoff series, and then the TA news came out, and I was like, well, forget this. I'm not doing this anymore.
Thanks a lot, Matt. That's great.
I know. But I was going to – I will unveil
– one of my senior writers pick. Abandoning an article, right? I tell you what.
It was all right. Constructed around how important TA was, so I would have had to rewrite like most of it. But I was actually going to pick the Grizzlies. I was going to pick the Grizzlies in six.
Wow.
And I mean, yeah, TA was vital to that.
That's fascinating to me because I went into the series thinking that he was not as vital. And I feel like, I talk about this in our Grizzly thoughts for game three, me and Ross Gerard did Grizzly thoughts for game three, and that'll post before the game. And I feel like I severely undervalue TA because people that are smarter than me, like Harrington, you, Matt, you know, folks like that are saying, wow, TA was, you know, losing TA is massive. And you see stats that come out talking about how well he defended Kawhi. I mean, I watched TA over the body of this season, and he looked worse than he did last year.
Yeah,
I guess maybe
I
you think he can get up for the Kawhi aspect of things.
It's that.
And he's done that before. So maybe I undervalue
TA. It's that
TA.
Part of it. Well, I can agree with both of your statements. Like, I have not thought he has been great this year, but he gets up for playoffs, and I just thought – the thing was, Pop wasn't going to want to put – Pop doesn't want to – Kawhi's the only guy on their team that can create. So he has to do so much on offense. And in the first round, Pop's not going to want to put a lot of miles on him. So I thought TA makes his life a living hell, makes it as hard as possible for him to score, makes him a little bit more efficient, and – you know, then you don't. You also don't have to play Wayne Selton. That's like a massive problem. And then I thought, you know, just kind of dovetailing into other things I thought would happen, you know, I thought they would put Tony Parker onto him to so that they could put other people onto Mike Conley. And then I thought TA would just kill Parker on the offensive glass. Like, TA has had a poor season, but he's covered up a lot of that with offensive rebounding. He gets like almost 10% of offensive – it's like over 9% offensive rebounds available that he gets. And I just thought he was going to get like a bunch – like I thought that would be close to like 11 or 12 when a point guard's trying to box him out. But anyway, getting back to like what I think they could have done also is I just think that – I think that you got to figure out a way to not play Andrew Harrison and Wayne Selton. If that is playing Vince Carter as backup point guard and just rolling with your best seven or eight guys, like I think that's what you got to do. You might even have to play like Jamichael at small forward or something and just give him a shot at slowing down Kawhi. Because really what you want to do is you just want to make Kawhi work his ass off because he's going to score 30. And you hope that rant lowers his free throw rate down you know, and he doesn't get as many calls. I think you guys were talking about that right when I called in, that he just doesn't get as many calls in game three. I think they have a great shot at getting game three. I think they have no shot in the series, but I think they have a really good shot at game three.
Everybody in our round table took the Grizzlies to win game three. I thought that was fascinating.
That's as negative
as the series. Yeah, that's probably true. As negative as the series has gone, that is something. And again, that is a testament to David Fizdale and what he did in his rant. He really kind of changed that story going into the game. And I think Memphis will get behind them in game three. If they can't win game three, I think they're going to get swept. I don't see them winning game four. To me, if they're going to win a game in the series, it's going to be Thursday night in Memphis. I think my biggest takeaway, and it's not even necessarily a Grizzly who's struggling or thriving, because you kind of hit the nail on the head with a lot of those guys. Wayne Selden's just not ready for this party. Andrew Harrison's the best option you have at the backup point guard, probably. Our own McCarty Maxwell wrote about Wayne Selden possibly doing that. Maybe. I mean, he's a bigger guard who's good at driving, but I'm not sure. You throw spaghetti against the wall and see if it sticks. You know, to me, the biggest story in terms of players that are doing well, I underestimated T.A. I think I'm willing to acknowledge that. And I think I didn't underestimate Kawhi, but I don't think I fully appreciated how good he is. I think it was Charles Barkley and the entire NBA on TNT crew who said he's the second best player in the NBA in front of James Harden, in front of Russell Westbrook. You know, LeBron James is still the best player in the NBA, and he will be until he gets the throne. But it may be not Russell Westbrook or James Harden. It might be Kawhi Leonard who does the dethroning if Giannis doesn't get there first, the Greek freak. Kawhi Leonard might legitimately be the second best player in the NBA because of what he does on both ends.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's tough because the Spurs – one of the reasons I thought that Kawhi, you know, out of your top four guys for the MVP, I thought he had the worst case. And it's not because I don't think – because I sort of lean second or third in that discussion for Kawhi. But the reason I would have picked him fourth is because the Spurs do everything they can to limit his role. Not limit his role in terms – just they want to keep him healthy. So they move him off of, like, he guarded Vince Carter a lot against us.
Yep.
And that was just because they were just limiting his role. They were just making things easy on him. Whereas LeBron has to do everything for his team, and then he just willingly is like, "Yeah, I'm not going to play this possession." So in terms of MVP, like, I would have eliminated Kawhi out of that. And we're talking about razor thin margins, but I kind of agree with what Barkley is saying, is at least for this year, I think I would have Kawhi. I would want – well, no, I don't know. I get their argument. You're talking about great players, but in terms of, like, it's just really hard to gauge. I think it's fair that you were like, well, I don't know how great – I didn't think Kawhi was this good because the Spurs don't let you see real Kawhi.
Right.
Pau Gasol didn't shoot three-pointers until late February, and then he's made 54% on, like, 90 attempts in, like, a month and a half. Like, what the hell?
Which is amazing. And then Tony Parker has had a resurgence in this series as well. So the Spurs may have actually figured out the whole flip-the-switch thing.
Yeah, where did this Tony Parker come from?
He's – never mind.
Probably a good idea.
Let's move on. Yeah.
So, Matt, we've sort of talked about this, kind of like touched on it, but in terms of, are there any adjustments that you think Fizdale can make at this point that can really, like, change the trajectory of the series, or at least give Memphis a better shot at winning this? Or is he or at this point, is he, like, just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic?
Well, you know, there's no silver bullet, but when you're down, you've got to jack up the variance. So really what that means is, like, if what you're doing is not working, you've got to try what you can to, like, change things up. So I don't know whether it's an either or, but you basically have to play 3-point shooters. So that means playing Troy Daniels and playing him with people who can get him open. So moving him, what I would do is I would start Troy Daniels over Wayne Selden, and then probably hook Vince early for James. I don't know. James Ennis. Yeah, I'd bring James Ennis in, and then I'd bring Vince back in for Mike Conley, so that you always – you basically have to have Vince and – you have to have two of Vince, Conley, and Gasol on the floor at all times, and you need to play Troy Daniels probably 24 to 30 minutes just to get his three-point shooting on the field or on the court. Because they're not going to win with two non-shoot playing two non-shooters. So Harrison, and you might be able to get away with some minutes from Harrison or Wayne Selden, but you really shouldn't be playing both of them. And I have been one of Harrison's, I'm not going to say advocates this year, but really I kind of expected him to suck because most rookie point guards suck if their first year. And I kind of think he has a place in the league, but it's not against the Spurs and it's not right now. So I'd probably, you know, I'd go to Troy Daniels personally, and then I would move Vincent to the backup point guard role.
Where would you kind of cap Conley's minutes at? Do you have like a limit you'd put on that? Like, would it be 40? Would you play him 40 minutes a game?
I mean, at that point, the difference between 36 and 40 playoff minutes is pretty big, but you just go by, you look at the guy and say, can he walk or can he not, basically. So there wouldn't be, it would just be a situational thing, you know. You'd use your, what I've tried to do is not use burn timeouts early, so you can use them later. And so, like, if you have, let's say, like a 5-point lead with 7 minutes to go, and the game flow is such that you can't get him out, I would call a timeout. Just coming up the floor, I would call a timeout, get him out for a minute, just like a minute or two, to get it down to 5 minutes. You know, we're talking about like two offensive possessions or something. And then I would tell whoever I brought in, you do not let this team shoot with over 5 seconds left on the shot clock. We are just trying to extend this game. And frankly, what I probably do is make sure I had two bigs on the court to where I could get an offensive rebound and just burn 48 seconds. I mean, like really like try to just prolong that stretch as much as possible. So to answer your question, like, you know, like, no, I wouldn't have a minutes limit, but I would like play him as much as humanly possible. I think 40 is too much though. Like, honestly, they have too much length.
So you're basically just saying like, like the time that Conley's out of the game, you just want to like slow that down to just like you just want to put that game into the mud, basically.
Yeah.
Or into the
quicksand. And it would probably be a bunch of Zebo ISOs with like four shooters around him. So it'd be like Zebo, Gasol, Vince, Ennis, and Troy Daniels. And just say, Zebo, you're going ISO. We're putting everybody else outside the 3-point line. And literally, he one of the reasons the Spurs guard him so well is that once he puts the ball on the floor, he never passes. So they just have their taller defender stand straight up with his arms, and they just know that will delay him, and he'll pump fake, and they'll bring another guy, and he will never pass it. But I would just tell Zebo, the second you see that guy coming, if you see him coming, you throw it, and then hopefully just get a 3-pointer or offensive rebound or something.
We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live in terms of our segment with Matt Hardlick, our senior staff writer over at GBB. Make sure you're following him on Twitter. If you don't already, do so at The Real Hardlicka. Matt, your forte for the site is definitely salary cap, trade. You're a very talented writer all around, but your expertise in terms of understanding the NBA salary cap and how that works is where your money, so to speak, if you made money, would be made for the blog.
My Twitter dollars.
Yeah, your Twitter dollars, your GBB bucks. So anyway, we're about to be approaching, you know, whether it's this weekend, next weekend, whatever it may be, if some miracle occurs and there's a parade on Beale Street, at some point this team is going to stop playing basketball for this season, probably sooner rather than later, we all tend to agree. And we talked about on our live stream, it was me, Chase Lucas, Mark King, and Grace Baker. We did our first live stream. It had over about 3,500 views on Facebook Live.
Whoa.
Much appreciated. Everybody that tuned in. Yeah, very cool. So it was a big success. We'll try to do one again if there's another away game in the series. Come on, Grizzlies. Knock on wood. But my point is, during this live stream, especially in the first half when it was pretty ugly, it got to talking about blowing it up. And I said
and
that
who
I
brought
not,
that up?
It was either me or Chase. I don't remember. It might have been me or Chase. Chase would make
me
sense.
Mr. Sunshine?
It might have been Chase. But anyway, and I said that I was not in favor of quote-unquote blowing it up unless it meant Chris Wallace was gone, because I did not trust Chris Wallace to completely rebuild this team. And a complete rebuild wouldn't necessarily mean trading Mike Conley. It would mean trading Marcus Saul. And we used your example of your Boston trade. If Boston offered that package, would you accept it if the Grizzlies got swept in four games and all that stuff? And I said I would, but I would only do it if it was with a new general manager. It didn't have to be Sam Hinkie or something like that. His name was brought up, but a new guy who has experience in terms of trying to rebuild and not necessarily doing it for the sake of, oh, we need to be as competitive as possible. You know, you want to stay competitive, but the emphasis needs to be on being sustained excellence or sustained competitiveness without, you know, blowing up everything every single season. And I think that would need to be the focus. I'm not sure Chris Wallace can do that. So we'll talk about this over the offseason is my point. So you don't need to go too in depth here, but beyond the playoffs, in your opinion, do you agree with that? Do you want to blow it up if Chris Wallace is still the general manager? Is it worth it? Or if he's still going to stick around, you may as well run it back because he's the guy who lucked in to this group who has made the playoffs for 7 straight years. It's an interesting place to be in because their salary cap space and because their draft pick situation is so dire.
Yeah, we'll that sounds like a topic mostly for the offseason, but I would say no, I'm not in favor of blowing it up. And one of the little sneaky reasons is find another team that is if you trade Gasol, you're taking a hit and you're probably a lottery team. Find another team with a clear path to making you a tanking team that doesn't involve like trading with Boston because they have that pick of ours. And it's got like really light protection. It's like top six unprotected. So if you go in a lottery, you are probably giving up like that's one of if you go tank, you want your picks. And so that pretty much is like you pretty much kind of have to trade with Boston if you're going to blow it up. So I would definitely not. Chase, I think, has tweeted this something to the effect of if it's rocky in December or January of next year, that he would consider it. I think that's fair. And the good news is if you're thinking about blowing it up, you probably don't have to get off Chandler Parsons because you're going to want crappy players on the team anyway. So you don't have to worry about getting off his – no, I mean, if you're talking about blowing it up, you're going to want Chandler Parsons. You don't have to worry about getting his dead money off. Like you just keep him, you know? So I don't know. But no, the answer is no, I would not do that.
And that's another part of what we talked about on the live stream is you would keep Chandler Parsons, especially if he's washed. And that was another piece of my statement was, I think that you'll be able to kind of tell where they're leaning with Parsons in terms of his health by those rumors, by any moves maybe they make. If they do something with Gasol, which is unlikely, I agree, in summer, that tells you that Parsons is probably done, and that would be a disaster. If they wait until, you know, October, November, December, maybe that means, hey, we still have hope. We think Chandler can come back and be maybe not what he was. I think it's probably unrealistic to expect that from him. But, you know, 70 to 80% of Chandler Parsons is still better than most of the guys that the Grizzlies have had on that wing in that wing position recently. So there's potential there. But I agree with you, Matt. That is a subject for the offseason. And, of course, we will be sure to have you on when that time comes. Matt, thank you so much for your time. It is much appreciated. And next time you sit down to write an article, finish through with it.
Yes, sir. I will most certainly do that. Great talking to you guys. Be good.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Matt Hardlicka. I give Matt a hard time. He's one of our best writers over at grizzlybearblues.com. I love reading his work. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already do so, at TheReal, HRDLICKA. We continue with Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am one of your hosts, Joe Monax. I'm joined by my co-host, Brandon Connor. We're about to welcome in our next guest on the show this week. But before we do that, we want to give a shout out to Grizz Essentials, our great sponsor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. We'll be giving away 2 Grizz Essentials subscriptions next week on the podcast. We're excited about that. But you right now, if you're impatient, if you want to get your Grizzlies gear as soon as possible, you can go to GrizzEssentials.net. It's a subscription service. They ship the gear right to your door. No fuss, no muss. Everybody's talking about, you know, take that for data and all these great shirts. Grizz Essentials has been doing this kind of gear stuff for a long time. They're successful. Our own Mark King runs the site, and we're excited to have this partnership and continue it with the good folks at GrizzEssentials.net. So make sure you're checking them out. Make sure you're subscribing, getting the best Grizzlies gear that you can possibly have just in time for the Grizzlies stretch run of their postseason. Our next guest tonight is a tremendous writer and editor over at Pounding the Rock, the SB Nation NBA blog for the San Antonio Spurs. We're excited to have him on. I've been reading his work. Pounding the Rock has always done a great job. Obviously, we're pretty familiar with them at this point, given all the series that they've been in the playoffs and, of course, being a divisional rival. I respect the Spurs for their excellence, and I respect Pounding the Rock for the work they do as well. Excited to have him on, and I'm excited to hopefully pronounce his name right. He is Quixem Ramirez. So before I mispronounce it again, how do you say, I tried to do research, I sort of just asked you, how do you pronounce your first name?
It's pronounced Quixem. It takes a lot of people. You did a really, really good job for your first try. It's like the Q and the X are the big ones that throw people off.
That's exactly kind of what it was.
Quixem, so I get a lot. You did a good job there.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Quixem, yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. I might just call you Ramirez. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Quixem. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate the good first effort there. Mullinax, believe it or not, gets messed up a lot, so I try to be as good with pronunciations as I can be. So thanks for coming on the show. I promise this is not just Brandon and I beating you up for being a Spurs writer and fan. We, especially me, I don't want to speak for Brandon. I do truly respect the Spurs. I don't hate them like other fans do. I think they do things the right way 99% of the time. But one thing that I disagree with them on a little bit is the way that Kawhi talked about, and of course he's going to, you know, company line, he's a San Antonio Spur, you know, the 19 free throws thing. He thought he got fouled legitimately every time, and of course his teammates backed him up and all that stuff. We don't necessarily need to talk about that as much because that didn't go nearly as viral as the David Fizdale rant that he was fined $30,000 for. We got the Grizzlies perspective from me and Brandon and Matt Hardlicka in our first segment. I'm interested in your perspective now. Do you think Fizdale was right for what he did in his rant?
I don't think he was right. I think he was right to say it given the context of the series, but I don't think he was right to say it, if you know what I mean. Like, there's three reasons why I kind of looked at his statements. I mean, first off, to preface it, I love what he said. It was awesome. It was viral. Coach Fizdale is a coach that I really look up to. I think has a bright future in the league. But there's three points that I don't think he really nailed with the take that for data thing. And first one, really, Memphis doesn't have a single person on the team that can guard Kawhi Leonard. He has 28 free throws in the first two games because, frankly, the Grizzlies have no one. He's put up 22 points on Vince Carter, 16 points on say 10 points on Gasol, 8 points on Seldon, on crazy efficiency. Like, he's averaging, like, more than 2 points per shot. And then for two, the Spurs are foul-averse. I mean, they're 6th in free throw rate this year. They've built 2 decades worth of excellent defense on the strength of not fouling people. So, and you look at the first two games, they fouled 16.5. compared to their regular season average, was 18.3. So there's not a huge disparity. And lastly, Memphis, as good as their defense was, they were 7th ranked in defensive rating. They struggle with discipline. I mean, they were 2nd to last in free throws allowed rate. So, like, you look at the numbers, they had 22 fouls in the regular season, 21 fouls in the playoffs. They allowed 27 fouls in the regular season, 28 here. It's not a huge difference. So, like, I think if you look at everything and, yeah, he has a point, and he's frustrated because this is kind of a coach that saw his team get beat pretty handily the first two games. So I agree with the tactics. I just don't agree with the rationale.
And that's probably fair. And I do agree with you, especially on the fact the Grizzlies are a physical team. They foul a ton. I think the frustration, and this is where, to the credit of Spurs fans and to Pounding the Rock as well, I think where people do agree with Fizdale is when he talks about the treatment of Mike Conley. Because say what you will about Kawhi Leonard, who is a tremendous player. We talked about in the first segment how I think one of the major takeaways for Grizzlies fans from the first two games is we knew Kawhi was good. I don't think we realized he was this good now. He is legit top 2 to 4 player in the NBA, and I don't think we fully understood that, partially because Popovich didn't want us to. You know, Pop is brilliant when it comes to conserving Kawhi, and he unleashes him when necessary. But I think the point that most people agree with is Mike Conley perhaps not getting the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the whistle of the officials quite often enough. And you think about Mike Conley over the span of his career, and obviously he had the headbutt with Kawhi Leonard recently that led to the cut over his eye. You know, he had the broken face against the Portland Trailblazers. He's had all sorts of ailments. And it just seems like he continues to battle on and grind through, and he doesn't seem to get the benefit of the whistle that maybe a Kawhi Leonard, a James Harden, you know, these other tremendous players get. Now, there's something to the idea that those guys know how to take contact, they know how to get those fouls, but at the same time, there were times where Mike Conley was completely obliterated against the Spurs, and there was no call made. So do you agree with Fizdale to that extent? Do you think Mike Conley deserves a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the contact at and around the rim?
Yeah, and the play, I agree with to an extent, too. And in the play you mentioned when he kind of broke his head open, I think, like, didn't he get called for a foul on that play? I remember him being called.
He did. He did.
Foul. So, like, that's point positive. But the thing where he lost me in the rant, I love the viral. I mean, my favorite line was, they ain't going to rook us. I mean, everyone talked about take that for data, but they ain't going to rook us. It was hysterical, and it made me laugh really hard. The point where he lost me was when he was describing Mike Conley, he was like, he's selfless. He respects the game. He doesn't complain. And I agree with all those points, but he was doing it in comparison to the San Antonio Spurs, who basically wrote the book on playing with class and playing, you know, with the exception of maybe Tim Duncan staring at the refs a lot. I mean, they wrote the book. They wrote the foreword. They wrote everything about how to play basketball, quote-unquote, the right way. So it's just funny that he used that comparison with this team. But, yeah, I think there's some validity to that. Maybe, I mean, I think Mike Conley's probably the best player in the world that has never made an All-Star team. He's incredibly important to this Grizzlies team, and you've seen in the data, like, their offense has fallen off a cliff when Conley's not on the floor. So, yeah, I think there's some validity to that.
All right. I wanted to ask you, you know, right before the series started, in the last game, Tony Allen left the game against the Mavericks, a basically meaningless game. He ended up with an injury that's going to keep him out for, I mean, basically the entire series, even if it ends up going long. I think it's still a long shot that he'll make it back. But in terms of, I think when I heard the news, I was pretty – I think some people were a little less concerned about what Tony Allen's absence would mean to the team. But I thought it really just kind of it kind of changed what the Grizzlies had to work with. It sort of – takes away what – new against Kawhi on the defensive end, and that like leads to him being more effective on the offensive end, and then also being more effective on the defensive end. And so sort of domino effect from what TA brought. How do the Spurs fans, how do they feel about the absence of TA? Are they familiar with him, what he brings, what he's done against the Spurs? ESPN had a pretty decent stat. I don't have it with me, but what Kawhi does when TA is on the floor, off the floor, but how do Spurs feel about Tony Allen not being able to play, and what are their kind of thoughts on just that absence?
His absence was huge. I mean, I looked at the 30 players and for a piece I wrote for Pounding the Rock, and I tried to look at what players were most important to the series, and when I looked at it, I knew Tony Allen was probably going to miss the series, but I put him fourth behind Kawhi, Conley, and Mike Gasol in the overall series importance, because I felt like you take him off the team, and you've seen in the first two games, the Memphis has literally nobody that can hang with Kawhi Leonard. And for a team that relies so heavily on him, it's terrible. So I think it's huge. I mean, when Kawhi, in the fourth regular season game, the one that Tony Allen missed, he dropped 32 points. Obviously, the overtime game, the Spurs won. In the two games he played, Kawhi put up 19 points and 22 points, and Tony Allen played those two games. So if you take off the defender that can realistically give him some trouble, and like you said, the trickle-down effect where Kawhi can guard Wayne Selden or he can guard Ennis, and he doesn't have to work as hard, helps them be more efficient on the offensive end. So I think that's a big part of the reason why it's been so lopsided in the first two games.
We're chatting with Queen.
Definitely.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brandon.
I was agreeing that I mean that TA makes like a huge difference. Even though he's not necessarily like a statistic guy, he just really just changed the whole trajectory of the series.
Yeah.
That happens.
And even though he can't really score, I mean, he's a smart cutter. He's a gritty player. He kind of personifies the Grizzlies' backbone. So without him, you're losing a lot, like on the intangible side too. There's
a
lot
definitely.
Of things to bring to the table.
We're chatting with Quisem
right.
Ramirez. Follow him at Quixem. That first name that gives so many issues, but it's a you know, it's a pretty good first name. Better than Joe, I'll give you that. Joe's pretty straightforward. Pounding the Rock writer extraordinary, does a great job over there. The Spurs SB Nation blog. Make sure you're checking them out. They do good work, just like Grizzly Bear Blues does, and all the other SB Nation NBA blogs. So the series is now in Memphis. You know, there's been articles coming out about Pau Gasol coming back. I think it was Jeff McDonald who put out an article about there being a Gasol in Memphis the past 16 years, you know, and Elvis was only in Graceland for 20 or something like that. So the Grizzlies and Spurs series has turned to Memphis. Spurs are up 2-0. You know, both games were relative blowouts, the second game being more competitive than the first. As the series comes to Memphis, you know, there's energy in Memphis behind the Fizdale rant. You know, there's all sorts of bootleg T-shirts, and people are fired up. You talked about Tony Allen and that energy he brings. I do think they've missed that, but now I think it will be replaced in the aggregate between the Fizdale comments, between the fans being fired up, the growl towels being back. I think that you'll see that energy without T.A. on the floor in Game 3, but San Antonio has head and shoulders been the better team in the series so far. Are Spurs fans expecting a sweep, or are they expecting a Game 5 in San Antonio next week?
I don't know. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I'm expecting a Game 5. I picked the Spurs in 5 as soon as the TA news. I had Spurs in 6, and then I revised that when Tony Allen was out for the series. So it all hinges on Game 3. I think if Memphis comes out, like you said, strong, and they're emotional, and they play the way that they want to play, then this series is going to 5. If they come out flat and the Spurs exert the will early and they somehow steal Game 3, then I think this is going to be a sweep running the way. So I fully expect a Game 5. I think Memphis is a terrific team, and they've been successful with their starting unit. It's when the bench comes in and they've been crushed. So, I mean, that bodes well. I mean, Game 1, they started off strong. I mean, when Conley and Gasol are on the floor, Memphis has been fine. I think it's just the issue is when the bench unit comes on and you have to rely on these guys that are young and unproven, and that's when the series starts to turn.
And I think that depth question, beyond the backup point guard stuff, because that just kind of is what it is. Andrew Harrison would be that guy, you know, whether Chandler Parsons and Tony Allen were healthy or not. But, you know, this Grizzlies team still isn't healthy. They are missing Chandler Parsons. Obviously, we talked, or you and Brandon talked about Tony Allen being out. I'm just curious, before we get to our final question for you, you are familiar with Chandler Parsons because he played in Dallas and then he played in Houston before that. So you played against him divisionally like the Grizzlies did. I thought that if Chandler Parsons was healthy, which obviously is a massive if, he's not, that if he were a healthy player and good to go, he would be a major game changer for Memphis in this series because of his size, because of his ability to facilitate. Do you think that the Grizzlies, obviously they missed Chandler Parsons. Do you think having Parsons would have made Memphis – you know, a real threat to upset the Spurs if it was the same kind of matchup here, 2-7?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the Spurs are vulnerable to teams that can be athletic on the wings, and if you had Chandler Parsons, you had Tony Allen, you had these guys, and, I mean, it's two starting wings, and you have to put Wayne Selden and Innes and 40-year-old Vince Carter to guard Kawhi Leonard. Things are going to go bad, so I think this could have been potentially a way more competitive series of those 2K. I mean, you look at last year, too. I mean, the Grizzlies were just done. They had so many injuries, and you saw the Spurs just run away. So we've yet to see really, and since I guess the 2011 series, but that first team was totally different. So it's Memphis being two fully healthy Grizzlies Spurs matchups, and you've seen that the Spurs have just been able to walk away because they've just been more fortunate on the health side. So yeah, I definitely agree.
It looks like the Chicago Bulls might be doing their best 2011 Memphis Grizzlies impression
yeah.
right now in their series with the Celtics. I agree with you. Not since the 2011 Spurs, this 2017 Celtics team, obviously a little off topic. It makes me think of that exact same thing. And, of course, the major difference being the passing of Isaiah Thomas's sister, which is much more important than anything involving basketball. But just in terms of the strict 1-8 matchup, the way that the Bulls are kind of taking it to the Celtics right now, you know, you can't take that emotional aspect out, but it is kind of eerily reminiscent, at least in my mind, to how that series in 2011 went down. And it's clear that Greg Popovich hasn't forgotten that, because every time they play the Grizzlies, unless they don't play Kawhi and they just kind of punt it, you can tell the Spurs are fired up and they want to make Memphis make their life tough as possible. We talked about the series being in Memphis now. They play game three on Saturday, or excuse me, they play game three on Thursday, game four on Saturday, and then the series will go back to San Antonio potentially for game five on Tuesday. What makes you most nervous about this series moving forward, if anything? Do you think it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to be Spurs in five, or is there something that kind of makes you nervous about where this series is going? Because I've jokingly said that the Grizzlies have the most momentum of any team down 0-2 to the Spurs in history. So is there anything that makes you nervous about this series, or do you think the Spurs, it's just a matter of time?
No, there's some nerves. I mean, with any playoff series, Spurs fans should know they've been on the wrong side of last year, beat Oklahoma City by 29 points, lost in six. I mean, there have been instances where they've started up strong and then ended the series. So there is always that in the back of my head wondering that. And I look at the lineup data, and when they have Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, Wayne Selden, Jamichael Green, and Vince Carter on the floor, they've been a plus five in 17 minutes. So I know that's a small sample size, but it shows that when they have arguably maybe their five best players on the floor or some combination of, they've been able to actually beat the Spurs. So if they can mitigate their bench disparity and kind of hopefully get something from them, maybe the fact that they're playing at home will help the younger players be more comfortable, then that could sort of turn the series, and it could be six. I mean, I don't see the Grizzlies winning the series just because what we saw in game one and two, but it's never a foregone conclusion in the playoffs. I don't think it's fair or respectful to say, oh, yeah, this series is over, Memphis is toast, because they've shown that they can grit and grind better than any other team. So as long as they have Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, I think that was a puncher's chance.
I got to tell you, that was a very respectful answer, Brandon. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree.
Yeah, it's really a good answer, but I've always really respected Memphis. I mean, they've embodied some of the Spurs ideals. Marc Gasol, whip smart passer. Mike Conley's awesome and underappreciated. And I've always liked Tony Allen because he's just fearless. But, like, this is I don't want to be pandering to your audience, but I do genuinely like this Memphis team. And I think if in different matchups or different health, this could be totally different.
I think one of the – we talked about this before, but, like, the Grizzlies have to, like, number. They've just been a complete disaster. So, like, if they can figure out some way to make it happen when he's not playing, they at least have a shot to, like, maybe not win the series, but at least get 5-6 or push the series. So –
they have to find a way to win both games at home, obviously, to have any hope.
Yeah.
If they lose one of these two, game five will be won in San Antonio. If they win both and you get a chance at a game six back at home, anything is possible going into a game seven. You roll the ball out and you see the best that you can. But you're getting ahead of yourself. You need to win game three first and foremost. You got to put one foot in front of the other. And I think the Grizzlies are in a place potentially to do that with the energy that they have. It's as must win of a game as I can remember in recent years, not necessarily during the entire grit and grind era, because obviously there was the Western Conference Finals when they were down 2-0 and all that stuff. So, but in the past few years, this is the most must-win game they've had if they hope to not get swept. Last year's series, everybody just kind of forgets about because the Grizzlies were so injured. This is a fairly healthy Grizzlies team, not fully healthy, but fairly healthy. They have to take advantage of this opportunity at home to keep the series alive. I got to tell you, I continue to respect the work that Pounding the Rock does, and this conversation has only added to that. Thank you so much, Kwesem, for joining us. Maybe we'll have you on down the road to summarize the series over the summer. Maybe the Spurs will be celebrating an NBA championship and you'll want to rub it in. Either way, hopefully we'll have you back on in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Kwesem Ramirez of Pounding the Rock. Again, one of the great SB Nation blogs out there. They do great work covering the San Antonio Spurs. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already, @QUIXEM. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am one of your hosts, Joe Mullinax. I'm joined by my co-host, Brandon Connor. And Brandon, we're going to get out of here on this, the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day this week. I got to tell you, it was one that I enjoyed doing because I got to type out Ain't Gonna Rook Us. And we had almost 140 folks vote in the poll so far. So thanks to everybody who has voted to this point. If you haven't voted yet, it is a poll that is going a full 24 hours. So there's still time, more than likely, depending on when you're listening to the show on Thursday, if you want to go vote. And it was kind of a fan-based, one-sided poll. I said, will this Grizzlies-Spurs series go back to San Antonio for Game 5? The two options were, yes, they ain't going to rook us. And the second option was, no, sweep ends on Saturday. And, of course, 80% of the voters, we are a Grizzlies fan blog, and that is a Grizzlies Twitter page. 80% of the folks said, yes, they ain't going to rook us. There will be a Game 5. Brandon, I will pose that question to you right now. And we've already kind of talked about it in our roundtable. We talked a little bit about it earlier. So I think it's fair to say we both believe that the Grizzlies will win a Game 5. All right? So we'll kind of – is that fair to say? Can we leave that one away? Or it will go to Game 5. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think – I mean, we talked about this with Matt too. And just like the way things set up for Game 3 just feels really good for Memphis. So I really think they win tomorrow night. And so I don't know how to feel about the next game yet, but – Game 3 feels like one that they should end up coming away with.
And that is what ties me into my last question for you, and I'll answer it as well. The next time we're on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves, it's going to be April 26th, okay? So it's a Wednesday night again, because potentially Game 6 will be on the Thursday, April 27th, if there is a Game 6. If there is a Game 6, obviously we'll be previewing the Game 6 and hopefully a Game 7 if the Grizzlies are trying to, you know, just stay alive. It's also possible that the series will be over and this will be our end of the season show heading into our playoff hiatus. So, Brandon, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot, and I promise I'll answer too. What is the theme of our show going to be next week? Are we getting ready for Game 6 or are we closing up shop for the season?
I would love to tell you that we're getting ready for Game 6, but right now it just feels like the Tony Allen injury, just there's too much to overcome there, and they just haven't found any sort of like the playmaking on the wings hasn't been there, and then, I mean, the point guard situation's been bad, so I don't know. I just feel like Game 5, I think they win Thursday. I think they go down 3-1 in the next game, and then I think Game 5 is it. Hate to be Debbie Downer here, but I think I picked Spurs in 5 of the series after the TA injury, and I want to stick with that.
I picked Spurs in 5 as well. I was kind of towards Spurs in 6, and that was the overall GBB, GrizzlyBearBlues.com prediction of the site's writers was Spurs in 6. I said Spurs in 5 in our roundtable that before the series started. I'm going to stay with that as well. I agree with everybody else. I think Game 3 is the game. If they can't win Game 3, I think they get swept. So they have to win Game 3. I think they'll lose Game 4 on Saturday, and then Game 5 will be the end. And unfortunately, it'll be our last show together, at least for, you know, a little over a month before the finals start. But it'll be a good season to review. Not a great season. I think most people will be disappointed. You know, expectations change with health concerns and things like that. But I do think there will be some disappointment about how this season is likely to end. But that's why they play the games. You know, bloggers and media types, prognosticators, you know, the ball gets rolled out on the court and we're not the ones jumping for it. You know, it's those guys that are on the floor. And, you know, games are not won and lost on paper. They're won and lost on the court. And the Grizzlies have a puncher's chance because they've got, in my opinion, the second and third best players in the series in Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. Kawhi Leonard is a level above them. But if they can find a way to get 70 points or so out of Gasol, Conley, and Randolph, maybe the bench pieces together 100 points here or there, or excuse me, 30 points here or there, and that gets them up to 100 or so, I think you've got a shot at winning. So that's got to be where their focus is and where their goal is.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about how expectations for this team have just like gone kind of up and down based on like health concerns and how they've been playing, and so they've. But, like, going into the series, before the TA injury, you kind of felt like they had a shot to win a win a playoff series, and that would be good enough. And then when the TA injury came out, it was just play him close. But like, if you in this situation, like you get to five, if you get to five, you win game three and you get to five games, then you feel okay about it. And if you're able to push the series to six, and you actually, I mean, given all things considered, you feel pretty good about that, even though your ceiling kind of lowered as you know, things have happened.
I know I always come back to Chandler Parsons. I come back to Chandler Parsons because he is the supposedly third best player on this team, and he is not healthy. And right now, Tony Allen, who you could argue is your fifth best player on this team, is also not healthy. So you don't have your third best player and your fifth best player, and they both play on the wing. They're both guys who would probably be starters for you. It's not overly surprising that they're struggling. Okay, you're depending on players that you weren't planning on depending on as much. They're outside of their roles. They're uncomfortable in those spots. I think the home cooking aspect of game three will allow, and of course we talked about the rant, hopefully the officials throw the Grizzlies a bone here. Fizdale and the Grizzlies certainly have paid the price for it, the $30,000 fine. It's going to be interesting to see how game three plays out. I think they win game three, but I'm with you. I think it's done in five. I hope I'm wrong. I really want to be wrong. I want to watch this team keep playing, but it's very possible that this will be our last playoff edition of the show, and next week we'll be doing our end of the season wrap-up. Regardless, we will be back on the Blog Talk Radio Airways on Wednesday, April 26th. It'll be the same time, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, to record the live podcast. Of course, if you miss it, you can catch it on iTunes. You can catch it on Blog Talk Radio. You can catch it on grizzlybearblues.com the day after it is recorded. No worries about that. We will have a show next week. It's just what the theme will be is kind of up in the air. It's up to the Grizzlies and the Spurs. Thanks to our guest, Quisem Ramirez of Pounding the Rock, the SB Nation blog for San Antonio Spurs. Thanks to Matt Ardlicka, great senior staff writer over at grizzlybearblues.com. Thanks, of course, to my co-host, Brandon Connor, who's doing a great job. Thanks to our tremendous sponsors, grizzessentials.net. Make sure you're checking them out. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on iTunes so you never miss an episode. And thanks most of all, as always, to you for listening. Wherever you are, however you may be, taking in the show. Thanks for making GBB Live and GrizzlyBearBlues.com part of your Memphis Grizzlies experience. Here's to hoping that Take That for Data and They Ain't Gonna Rook Us helps inspire Believe Memphis to a win or two, preferably two, at home over the weekend. And if not, then I think that'll be the end for the Grizzlies. The only way they still have a shot to get back into this series is if they win both games at home. Thank you again for listening. Thanks again to our guests. Thanks to my co-host, Brandon. Thanks to GrizzEssentials.net. I am your host, co-host, Joe Mullinax. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. And let's believe Memphis one more time. Let's get it done. Let's get these two games in the Forum on Thursday and Saturday night.